calm, cool, collective, laid back, reserved. That's him. So because of that, he doesn't apply pressure to himself.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
I'm all stressed out about all the time, man. Come to you from the Curtis Subaru Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. I got a lot of, I've got so much stuff to get to here. Including, if you ever are about to take a drug test, I want you to be very, very careful. Because there is something that can make you fail the drug test. You know, like everybody says, you can't eat poppy seed muffins before taking a drug test, all kinds of stuff like that. But I've learned something new just in the last few hours here. A Olympian named Shelby Houlihan, she's a runner, a U.S. Olympian runner, and she was all set to go to Japan. She ran for America in 2016, but she has just been given a four-year ban because she failed a drug test. Now, how did she fail the drug test? She was took a banned substance called nandrolone. And how in the world could she let this happen right before going to the Olympic trials? Well, she explained it to Fox News today.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, I'm banned for 4 years. We're trying to seek every option that we can to appeal this. It's not right. I don't think I should be serving a four-year ban for something that I didn't do. And we're trying to exhaust every option that we can. Never had a positive test. I've never even missed a drug test before.
Mm. Okay, so how did she have the banned substance in her system?
Pig offal has high concentrations of nandrolone. And this food truck that I happened to go to that night, I've eaten there a lot before. And this food truck serves pig offal as part of their menu. And I happened to, I think, ingest this hormone. And 10 hours later, at the peak of when it's supposed to be in your body when you're digesting it, I happened to get tested. And honestly, it's this very unlucky series of events. I'm kind of blown away by what happened, and I can't believe that I'm going through this as a clean athlete.
It's a burrito. That's why she failed the drug test. She ate a burrito, and pig offal, in case you're wondering, is the internal parts of the pig. So that would include the heart, lung, brain, liver, cheeks, and tongue. And when I go to get a burrito, I ask them to always include a little bit of cheeks and tongue in the burrito. Actually, that's what I asked for when I'd go on dates in college. No, so it's the burrito that gave her the banned substance, and her attorney says her urine is important here.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that Shelby's urine is more important than anything else in this story. There's been a lot of talk online about, you know, what she ate, what she didn't eat. I mean, there's only two possible explanations here. Either it came from foodborne contamination or it came from Shelby cheating and taking an oral steroid. Her subsequent test was clean, which means it could not have been an injection. And normally the way anyone would take nandrolone would be by way of injection. It doesn't help you really to take it this way. We know Shelby didn't take it this way.
She took it through a burrito, for crying out loud. All right. Wanted you to be forewarned. Also, we've got some local video that has gone viral nationally. This happened at the Ace Hardware store in Lake City. So as the story is being told, a guy went into the Ace, and this is just another example of the mask craziness. A guy went into the Ace, and he wasn't wearing a mask. And the two employees in the store kicked him out. And then he says he went back in because he wanted to talk to the manager. And his buddy is recording the video. And one of the Ace employees is, as the video picks up, is holding a baseball bat and kind of pushing the guy out of the store with the baseball bat, and that's where we pick things up.
With the bat?
Get out.
You talk to me with
you.
That bat?
Get out.
These are the employees at Ace Hardware in Seattle. What a punk. Look at this. What the f***, man? Real guys here, huh?
Okay. So the guy who's fighting with the store employees, his name's Bobby Dixon, and he told ComoNews.com about the employee coming at him with a bat.
It was actually quite terrifying. I've never had anyone come at me with a weapon like that, and, you know, it was fight or fight, and I was trying to get out of there, and, you know, I just kept, you know, he kept coming at me super aggressively.
And then what you see is the two guys, the store employee and this Bobby guy, they square up in boxing stances, and then they do an MMA takedown after they throw a couple punches at each other, and they're down on the ground all of a sudden and still fighting. And he says, we just wanted to talk to a manager.
You work in customer service, and if you're going to be rude, you know, that I'm going to take your name down and, you know, give it to your boss.
Okay, and we're just hearing this guy's side of the story. We tried to get the Ace Hardware side, but their phone, their voicemail's full. They're not answering their phone. Nicole's made several attempts to get the store to give its side of the story. Bobby, the would-be customer, the unmasked customer, says he was following the rules.
I was following the rules. I had my mask on. So, I mean, you know, to take it out on me, that's just kind of childish.
Okay, so we've only heard that one side of the story, but it's pretty dramatic video to see a store employee and customer. Have you seen the video, by the way, of the Walgreens in San Francisco where a shoplifter goes in, he's got a bike, it looks like one of those rental bikes. He goes in, he's got a huge black garbage bag, and he just empties shelf after shelf into this black garbage bag. There are three people with their phones out, including the store's security guard. And they're recording this guy. And then he's got the full garbage bag of stolen merchandise, and he goes right by the security guard. And the security guard makes a real wimpy attempt to grab the bag, and the guy is able to pull it away and then rides the bike out of the store. And as I was watching this, I was thinking, what self-respecting man who's got a job as a security guard wouldn't have shoulder-checked this guy into the shelves? And I had a bunch of people say, well, you'll get fired if you do that. They don't allow the employees to engage, which is why they've closed 17 Walgreens stores in San Francisco over the last 4 years, because the shoplifting is so absolutely out of control. But watching a security guard, he's got his phone out, he's recording it. The guy's got a mask over his face. Not going to figure out who it is. But I can't believe the security guard, or he could have stepped in front of the bike. As I said, he could have easily shoulder checked the guy into the shelves, but just let him go off. And then CBS This Morning, listen to this. They were so sympathetic to the shoplifter.
This video shows a guy in San Francisco stuffing items into a garbage bag inside a Walgreens drugstore, even as two people, including a security guard, recorded him on their cell phones. The suspect seems unfazed. You see him hopping on the bike, pedals between the two. The one guy tries to grab the bag, manages to keep hold of the stolen loot while riding the bike outside of the store. This all happened on Monday.
Okay, so then at the end of this report, as the anchors are sitting around talking about it, this one guy, Tony Ducopel, I don't know his name, but he had great sympathy for the shoplifter.
Or, you know, some toothbrushes, whatever it is.
Should the security guard be videotaping when there's a woman videotaping right next to him?
Yeah.
I mean, you would think he could at least try to approach the guy.
Yeah. It's and also, why did you let him in the store with a bicycle?
The bicycle.
That was my first thought.
That reads also as an act of desperation. I mean, you're not getting rich off of what you take from a Walgreens. You're getting probably something you need. I don't know the details of that particular case.
I mean, a bag full. They looked like hair products.
That's what it says. It was hair
products.
Which are valuable.
So, yeah. And he's filling his bag full of them.
What in the heck? The guy said, I'm not getting rich off stuff you steal at Walgreens. And he was probably taking stuff he needs. That is just pathetic. That's the level of care that we have for thieves. That it's always sympathy for the thieves. All right. And then finally, before I get to the big lead here, just wanted to share this with you. The folks at, what's the name of the group? Informed Parents of Washington. They were the ones who were fighting so hard against the child sex bill for our schools, for the curriculum. And everybody said, oh, it's not going to be as bad as you say. Well, they have a flyer that they say is from a middle school in Tacoma. And I'm looking at a picture of the flyer. They claim it was passed out at the school. And it talks about, right at the top, age of minority and consent for sex. The age of consent is 11. It is not a crime if you are 11 and have sex with somebody 2 years older or less. It's not a crime if you're 12 or 13 and have sex with somebody who is 3 years older or less. What kind of pedophiles are pushing this stuff in our schools, telling 11-year-olds, as long as he's not older than 13, it's okay to have sex? And informed parents of Washington on their page, they said, we called the school to confirm and were told they couldn't confirm anything yet because the principal was talking to legal right now. The receptionist said a counselor thought it was a handout from a sex ed curriculum. We know they did not issue a denial and are currently seeking legal guidance. We will be watching for a response from the school and will post an update. So they're telling 11-year-olds they can have sex, but they were reassuring to all of us, oh, no, it's not as bad as everybody claims, the most radical sex ed agenda in the history of our country. No. It's just about getting kids sexually active as young as possible. How can you think that's bad? And with all that as mere prelude, let's get to the big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
I'll be honest. I went a little nuts at the top of the show because there has been so much gun violence, and it's been a bad year before this last week, but this last week it has been absolutely out of control all around King County. There was a shooting at Shulshul over the weekend. There was four people shot in White Center. Two of them were killed. A guy was killed in Pioneer Square over the weekend. Last night, a guy driving with a two-year-old shot and killed. And then this morning at 9:30, a road rage incident, a 20-year-old down in Kent, a 20-year-old shot and is in critical condition. So it's an epidemic, the gun problem. And it's a direct result of having politicians who have legalized drugs, who have encouraged as much gang warfare as possible, and have released gun felons from prison. Thank you, Jay Inslee, for that. And so they say they're finally ready to take on the gun violence problem. And I thought, well, it's about time. What are you going to do? Stop and frisk? Which saved so many lives in New York City. Their murder rate plummeted when they were doing stop and frisk in New York City. So are we going to do that? Are we going to do stop and frisk? Are we going to start locking up criminals in jail? Maybe even put felony gun criminals in prison? Are we going to have more prison space to lock up the bad guys? Well, here, it's not quite any of those things. Channel 4, ComoNews.com, talked about Dow Constantine's proposal.
New tonight, the King County executive made an emergency proposal to prevent gun violence after a series of deadly shootings in the last week. Two people were killed and two others injured in White Center on Friday. A man was shot and killed in Seattle Central District on Thursday, and a man was gunned down in Pioneer Square on Saturday. The emergency budget would invest close to $1.5 million for more case managers and life coaches to build relationships in communities, including White Center, Kent, and Burien.
You can hire life coaches. I don't know what to say. We've legalized drugs in King County. The cartels have an open southern border, porous border, thank you to Joe Biden. So we've got illegal drugs streaming across the border, laced with fentanyl. They're coming up I-5 and landing here in King County because we are the softest county in the United States on drug crimes. You have gangs that are selling drugs and are fighting for turf, and this is predominantly a drug war. as, you know, Casey McNerney from the prosecutor's office and then the rest of that Como 4 piece revealed.
It would also expand the regional Peacekeepers Collective, which...
Yeah, Peacekeepers, right.
Our crime strategies unit takes a look to see exactly where these shootings are happening. And the more data we have at the prosecutor's office, the more we can try to work with those community groups to try to address these, you know, concerns before they become bigger problems.
During the first quarter of this year, 69 people were shot in King County. The county says the vast majority of those victims are young men and people of color.
That's because it's a drug war. And it's a drug war because we have more drug customers, and we have more drug customers because we've legalized drugs. We've done everything wrong. We've done absolutely everything wrong. And then when I said they should do stop and frisk, which made the murder rate in New York City plummet. And I got a text and said, stop and frisk, Dory. You believe in racial profiling? Well, did you hear what she just said? That predominantly it is young black and brown men who are getting murdered in this. And how naive are people when they say, police should never profile. Every agency profiles. If you have a drug war, there's predominantly young black and brown men. Of course, you are going to focus solving this problem on that demographic. The FBI profiles all the time. But everybody's got this naive viewpoint that no matter how overwhelming the evidence, that police should never take any of that into account. And then Joe McDermott, the King County councilman, he talked to King Five.
We've already dedicated resources to this and made investments. This is expanding it.
So the failure of the current program is ending so many lives. And so what does he say? He's go, well, we're just going to throw more money at an existing program. An existing program that is an abject failure and seeing record numbers of murders. And how are they going to measure their success?
Success would be reaching out, engaging with people, having them recognize contacts and what's going on in their life that leads them into certain situations that promote gun violence, and giving them the ability, the skills, the resources to defuse that.
Life coaches. We've got gang turf war all around the county. We've got cartels shipping in fentanyl-laced heroin into our county. Got a prosecutor who's legalized all drugs in our county. We have Jay Inslee releasing gun felons from prison, including in our county. And Dow Constein wants life coaches. It couldn't possibly be stupider. It really couldn't be any more stupid. But this is... you know, them just saying, well, who could question a life coach? We're such wonderful progressives. We'll just coach them up. Now, put them in prison. Put criminals in prison. Take the people who are the felons with gun crimes and keep them locked up instead of turning them loose. But the, you know, state DOC, they say they're going to reduce the prison population by thousands over the next couple of years because of our wonderful progressive politicians. And people are dying. People are dying almost every day around here now. And this is what you get when you put people like Jenny Durkin, Seattle City Council, Dow Constein, Jay Inslee, when you put them in charge, you get a disaster like this. But they're going to provide life coaches. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We will check the news for you. And then the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, Mike Solon, he's going to join me live. There are a couple of stories that are really disturbing. And we'll talk to him about that coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. This is a horrible time for law enforcement in our area, and I know all around the country. They honor their fallen. As you know, Officer Lexi Harris, who we've just heard incredible things about, was stopping to help an accident on I-5 on her way home from work was struck and killed on I-5. And I've got a couple other stories I want to talk with Mike Solon about. He's the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. Joins us live here on the Dory Monson Show. Mike, I appreciate you coming on with me.
Good afternoon, Dory. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for all of your loss. And I know the public feels this very deeply, but I know those who wear the badge, that they really are affected by this.
Yeah, I mean, she was special. She really was. That's not an overused cliche term. She really embodied how special of a human being she was. And she's been a cop for 5 years. I've recently got to know her the past 2 years. And, man, I really can't put words to describe how good she was, just as a human.
So, I mean, and when you say special,
stop,
I mean,
her,
I mean,
car,
give me some ideas of what just made her stand out like that.
I never saw her angry. In fact, I just heard a story today when she was on the protest lines, when we were just getting hit with so much vitriol, just getting assaulted. And she never had anything bad to say about the people that were protesting or rioting. That's even when in the presence of the council members who were just saying the worst things that you could imagine at the police officer. She was just the consummate pro. And she really was our Wonder Woman. She was really well-versed in martial arts. And she just had a kind heart, and she just was able to read the situations, and she was just the ultimate public servant.
Yeah.
I can't even describe it more. That's how just epic she was.
No, you gave us a pretty good idea there, and I'm glad to hear all about her. On another issue, Mike, six Seattle police officers are being investigated right now because they went to a political rally in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. Two posted pictures on social media, four self-reported, and they're being investigated now, as I understand it. And, man, I'm telling you, Mike, this sounds like a witch hunt to me, that OPA is asking them to prove that they didn't break any laws. Is that standard protocol? Or are you guilty until proven innocent if you're a cop?
You're not supposed to be. And that's just the sad reality of the politics that we're, I think, serving in the city of Seattle. This is a clear violation of their United States constitutional civil rights. It's also a clear violation of Washington State Constitution in terms of their civil rights. It's also a violation of the city charter. It's also a violation of the SPOG collective bargaining agreement. I sound frustrated, but I don't even know if frustrated is the proper term. The accountability process here is absolutely going above the pale of what is reasonable. And when you violate people's just protected personal rights, this isn't accountability anymore. This is something activist-led, if you will. It's stunning what is occurring.
Well, I've heard that they've been asked to turn over personal documents, text messages, pictures, receipts from hotels or restaurants so that they can prove that they were not inside the Capitol, even though there's no evidence to suggest that any of the six were. I mean, if they weren't, then they just went to a political rally like any other citizen is allowed to do. So, first of all, is that true that they're being asked to turn over personal documents? And aren't there legal protections against that demand?
Well, and that's what we're saying is a violation of their civil rights. I mean, just imagine that they even asked for their families' text messages relative to those timeframes they were there.
Under penalty of what? Are they being told they're going to be fired if they don't?
Penalty of termination. The final disciplinarian within a police department, such as the Seattle Police Department, is the chief of police.
Right.
He or she is the one that hands out an officer's discipline when there is an internal investigation, such as Office of Police Accountability. This became an order on behalf of the director of the Office of Police Accountability, who is a civilian. And we tried to verify that with the chief of police, Chief Diaz, and we never heard back. And the only thing we heard was that the director of Office of Police Accountability, per the charter, has the right to conduct their investigation in any manner that they see fit. They completely skirted our question whether or not this was a direct order with the threat of termination. And the only one that can enforce that is the chief of police.
Well, I know so, you wrote an email to your members, and you said that the six officers were ordered to answer personal protected political questions. So that's where we are now. As a city, as a region, that we have a political litmus test, and if you don't think the way the mob mandates, you can be fired from your job.
That's exactly the messaging that they're putting out there, at least the perception amongst officers. And on the heels of that order by a civilian that we deem is an unlawful order, this FAS email, a department entity, Financial Administrative Services, who swing a big bat and control basically the maintenance and the upkeep of city buildings, particularly police buildings and the police fleet, painting us all as white supremacists. And
well,
so,
yeah, of course,
we also authored a letter there too to the various departments in the city that handle civil rights and human resources violations, and we've been in communication with some of them. But this is the type of environment that we think is a hostile work environment, and we're using the entities within the city and in the state to take corrective action with the powers that be to protect police officers. We're the only thing that our entity is the only thing that's left. That's why the blue line exists.
Yeah, you're what stands between our region and complete chaos and our anarchy. And so you say you're looking for somebody to understand that they're violating civil rights. But when you have a city council that has members who openly hate police, who stand idly by while a guy with a megaphone is telling cops to take out their gun and shoot themselves in the head, and they don't have any problem with that, but they have a problem with officers who might not think correctly according to their ideology. When you have a city council who can't stand the police, when you have this political correct ideology that says all cops are B-words and white supremacists, who do you go to? To protect your rights.
Well, hopefully you can go to the courts, and hopefully the rule of law still is in effect to protect police officers. And if we don't have that anymore, then to your point, who will be there to fill that void? I'm not sure. And I think this is part of their reset of the police department. And mind you, I've told your listeners before that a year ago, the mayor and the city council, at least the president of the city council, said that this agency was the modeled reformed agency.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
For others to emulate. Yep. And here we are, post Floyd, and now apparently we're white supremacists and our civil rights can be violated. And we've got close to 300 people now leaving. And I haven't heard a peep from the city council with our officer who just perished in the line of duty. And I'm trying to get flags lowered to half staff, and that is proving to be a battle. I'm not sure why.
Really? City Hall hasn't lowered the flags to half staff after it's been ruled a on-duty incident that took Lexi Harris's life? I didn't
know.
Still
hasn't happened. She unfortunately passed on Sunday morning, and what are we on, Wednesday? So I messaged the powers that be today, and they're still working on it. Hopefully that gets done. But in my view, it doesn't take long to throw an email out there in order and people go out to the flagpole and just lower it half staff. So for your listeners, if you have a flag that is flying today, out of respect for this fantastic human being, this police officer, please lower your flags at half staff.
Got it.
And don't ever give up. Don't ever give up to up supporting police.
Well, I'm amazed at your resilience and so many of your officers' resilience in face of all the crap that's thrown at police around here. All right, my brother, hang in there. Appreciate you coming on with me, Mike.
Yeah, and just real quick, Dory, appreciate we are setting up an account for the remembrance of Officer Lexi Harris. It is going to be called the Officer Lexi Harris Benevolent Account. Okay. You can find it at seattlepoliceofficers.com. Should be up and running by late afternoon today. And anybody that wants to donate at any local Boeing Employees Credit Union can do so. And the account name, again, is Officer Lexi Harris Benevolent Account. What a fantastic person she was.
Got it. All right, seattlepoliceofficers.com or any BECU. All right, Mike, hang in there. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, brother.
Mike Solon, president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. And we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day next on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, Sean, did I just burp at the end of the Valentine Ruth spot?
You sure did, Dory. I think that was a little treat for some of the P1s out there.
Oh, man. What a professional. It's like it's my first day on the job here.
All right. That was classy. I heard that too.
Never mind. Let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Remember a few days ago, I played a montage of Hillary Clinton, who has been saying for 5 years now that the 2016 election was not legitimate, that Donald Trump stole it from Hillary. Well, I'm glad that she can be consistent.
And sadly, what we've seen over the last 4 years, and particularly since our election in 2020, is that we have people within our own country who are doing Putin's work. Now, whether they are, as we say, witting or unwitting, they are doing his work to sow distrust, to sow divisiveness, to give aid and comfort to those within our country who, for whatever reason.
She has not let go of 2016, but I guess she was doing Putin's work for those 5 years. As for Putin, he met with Joe Biden, and somebody asked him, hey, what's the difference between Biden and his predecessor, Donald Trump?
You once described President Trump as a bright person, talented. How would you describe President Biden?
Well, even now, I believe that former U.S. President Mr. Trump is an extraordinary individual, talented individual. Otherwise, he would not have become a U.S. president. He's a colorful individual, and you may like him or not. And he didn't come, of course, from the U.S. establishment. He had not been part of big-time politics before. And some like it, some don't like it, but that is a fact. President Biden, of course, is radically different from Trump because President Biden is a career man. He has spent virtually his entire adulthood in politics. He has been doing it for a great deal of years, and I have already said that, and that is an obvious fact.
Trump was colorful. He was brilliant. And Biden's very different. and then he said he's not looking for a fight.
Of course, one can present this for domestic political consumption, which I believe is what has been done in the United States in the last few years, where the U.S.-Russia relationship was sacrificed for the sake of a fierce political strife inside the U.S. We can see that. We know it well. We have been accused of all kinds of things, election interference, cyber attacks, and so on and so forth. And not one time did they bother to produce any kind of evidence or proof, just unfounded accusations. I'm surprised that we have not yet been accused of provoking the Black Lives Matter movement. That would have been a good line of attack.
What do you think?
We did not do that.
What do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement?
I think that, of course, this movement was used by one of the political forces domestically in the course of election campaigns. But there are some grounds for it.
Yeah. Putin is right. Black Lives Matter movement was used by the Democratic Party to create discord in America. And there's no question about that. As for Biden, he responded to Putin on BLM.
Mr. President, when President Putin was questioned today about human rights, he said the reason why he's cracking down on opposition leaders is because he doesn't want something like January 6th to happen in Russia. And he also said he doesn't want to see groups formed like Black Lives Matter. What's your response to that, please?
My response is kind of what I communicated, but I think that's a ridiculous comparison. It's one thing for literally criminals to break through cordon, go into the Capitol, kill a police officer, and be held unaccountable. And it is for people objecting and marching on the Capitol and saying, you are not allowing me to speak freely. You are not allowing me to do A, B, C, or D.
They did not kill a police officer. He died of two strokes, natural causes. Check the Washington Post. Mr. President, he died of natural causes. They didn't kill a cop. Stop spreading that lie. Did I really burp at the end of that Valentine roofing spot? They'll give you a free estimate. ValentineRoof.com. Well, on that note, Todd Gurley's coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. See you back here tomorrow. Hi, dude. Blip.
Great story. Compelling and rich. Well, that's going to do it for all of us here at Channel 4 News. You stay classy, San Diego. I'm Ron Burgundy.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.